Blog Talk Radio.
And good evening. Welcome to another edition of the New Africa Black Belt Wall Street Business Association. I am speaking to you live from our studio here in Washington, D.C., and I am your host, Bilal Masadiq Bynum, along with my co-host,
Abdul Aziz Shaheed. Greetings to our audience. Assalamu alaikum to you, Brother Bilal.
Alaikum salam, Brother Aziz. How are you this evening?
Doing well. And yourself, my brother?
Everything is very well. Alhamdulillah. And when we say that, we mean praise be to Almighty God. So
Yes, brother.
Praise be to God.
Absolutely.
Looking
forward to our show tonight.
Say that again, Brother Aziz.
Phil, looking forward to our program tonight.
Good. Look forward to discussing this program with you, my brother. Informative. Those of you, the listening audience, our call-in number at the Blog Talk Radio, for those of you who would like to share a call in, the call in number is 657-383-1376. I thought it was 1372. Am I wrong, Brother Aziz? Let me make sure. Let me make sure of that. I thought it was 1372. When it says here on the card, 1376, let me be for sure of that. I don't know why I feel like there's a misprint on this card, but hopefully I'm wrong.
Yeah.
What is the, you don't have to call in right there in front of you, Aziz? Let me get another card. Hold on. Oh, no, that's my business. But just a moment, brothers and sisters. I want to be for sure that I am giving you the right information. And look like... any other time, these cards would be all over the place. But let me take another look here. And it's, forgive me. Boy, this is something I normally know by heart, but I'm looking at my cards, the new ones that just came in, and I'm hoping that they are correct. Let me just go to the file. You don't have my co-host, he doesn't have it, so let me go and look in our it's 1372. I was correct. It's not 1376. These cards got the wrong number, so we're going to have to throw them away. But it's 1372. So, again, repeating that number, 657-383-1372. That's the number you would give to anyone who is trying to call in. And 1372. So we have it correct, Brother Aziz.
Yes. Dropped off there for a minute.
But anyway, yeah, I think somehow I might have hit the, when I was looking for the card, I may have hit the mute call. And I just looked up and saw that and immediately corrected it. But anyway, welcome to the show. And again,
yes,
that's
yes,
the call-in number. for those who would like to call in and participate with us on tonight's show. I also want to greet our Delaware director, Brother Rashid. Brother Rashid, good evening. Brother Rashid, we have you on mute. We're greeting you. If you can hear us, we would be nice to hear from you. Okay, but Brother Rashid will participate with us. We'll leave his mic open, and we look forward to his participation. At any time. Oh, wait a minute. We might. That might be our educational director, Sister Swan.
Good evening.
Greetings.
That's not. That looked like my sister's number. How's everything?
Yeah.
It's always nice to have you on. You know, we always want you on with us. Some of our very best intellects.
It's wonderful to be with you.
And look forward to tonight's show. We don't have we're on our third part three really of a continuation that we see no need to get away from, and that is the power of the black bank, the power of the black dollars, and how we can keep our dollars in our communities rather than putting them into financial institutions where those institutions think it's theirs to keep. So, and we're talking about close to, just in our churches alone, close to $1 trillion. And this has nothing to do with our other deposits that we make in general. So you can see how powerful. And again, our dollar is, and of course, we always going to talk about our consumer spendings. And this year, of course, it went up. And statistics are showing that as of the end of the year, 2023, our consumer spending was $1.9 trillion. So, again, we have to repeat facts. Because it is a fact that if African Americans was a nation by itself, our gross national product would be about the fifth or the sixth richest, largest gross product in the entire world. So many, many countries are. The continent of Africa, the continent of Europe, many, many continents, and I ain't saying countries, I'm saying the entire continents, would not have the power of African Americans' growth national product if we was an independent nation. And that particular power, again, is the power that the United States take for itself and forget about sharing it back into our communities. And we will talk about that this evening along with our subjects on banking. We'll talk about the clearance houses, the Federal Reserve clearance houses, and how monies are cleared, and when it's cleared, it's supposed to go back to the community once it goes to the Federal Exchange. I guess I'm talking about it, Sam, we will talk about it. I'm talking about it right now. But once it goes to the clearance houses at the Federal Reserve, then it goes to the Federal Reserve Money's Exchange Commissioner. And that Money Exchange Commissioner is to see to it that the monies that was deposited the day before, the next day, is back into the community from which the deposit came. But, of course, our monies, again, go back to the communities, the zip codes that we share with our with Caucasians. And those Caucasians, of course, simply keep the monies because they see to it that there are no financial institutions in the black communities to send our monies. So our monies is in their financial institutions and they simply keep it. And so we will continue those conversations tonight along with other conversations. But again, Black Belt Wall Street, New Africa Black Belt Wall Street, our title is the power of our dollars and to have our own financial institutions as to where we will now be able to circulate our monies throughout our communities. And like I said, with monies that powerful and being as powerful as the fifth richest country in the world, you can see how what we could do to our communities if we had control of the monies that we put into these banks that keep our monies. And that's why you'll see so much poverty, so much crime, and so much of happiness. And the happiness to look forward to a productive future because, again, there is nothing, you can't have happiness in a capitalist society when you don't have cash. And of course, that's what has been happening in our communities and for so long. And they wonder why we have so much crime. And they're trying to pass all these bills and legislation to say that we're going to crack down on the juvenile crime. We're going to treat our juveniles as adult criminals. And we're going to start enforcing the laws as to where the same millions of black folks that we already have in prison, now we're going to start sending our kids to these prisons and build new prisons. And that's the way enforcement has always been in our communities. And that's the way that society see that a way of keeping that type of enforcement. But again, I say, and I'm just one of the members of the New Africa Black Belt Wall Street, but I say economical opportunities would change all of that, because if there was economical opportunities, then one could see happiness in their future, in their presence, and in their future, because economic opportunities would put an end to violent crimes And at least I think so. But this business of locking our kids up and building more prisons after all, we've already seen the millions of African Americans that are in prison right now and the millions that have already been in prison, and this has been going on, I guess, ever since the so-called freedom of us. But that so-called freedom, they knew without economic opportunities that you would either live in poverty or you would become criminals. And so you can see what happens if we took and changed the power of our dollars, and by changing it, that means we would keep our dollars in our communities. But we have to have financial institutions where we can do banking in our own communities, and the more deposits we put into the banks, the more assets the banks and the communities would acquire. Because banks, the more monies they have to do something with the monies. And the monies that is being deposited into their banks from the community which is being deposited from, now can put those monies back into the communities by the communities putting monies in the bank and then borrowing monies for businesses, borrowing monies for health care, borrowing monies for education, borrowing monies to build their communities. And now the banks and the communities both will be acquiring assets, and the community is growing economically. So that's my introduction to tonight's topic. And, of course, Brother Aziz, my co-host, it's your turn, and we will go right on and speak to all of our state directors, and then we will open it up to our general public. Brother Aziz.
Thank you, Brother Bilal, and greetings to our listeners. And I'd like to say that also greetings to Sister Swan, our director from Delaware, educational director from Delaware, as well as you, brother. And I was going to say, following up some of the things you mentioned about the value of the black dollar, well, for one of the things that the black dollar doesn't become valuable until we have it somewhere where it's collective, where we've created a value, and that's that black bank. And like you said, the African American or that black bank is not there to gain a lot of wealth and have a lot of wealth stored up. The bank is more or less a place where monies are exchanged. Monies go through banks and they're used for commerce. Continually, the banks don't sit on the money and just let it sit there, and it supposedly grows. Banks, the way banks grow is through securities. Securities like, you know, we're getting car loans, different other loans that the banks, when they loan their monies out to businesses or purchasing land, like banks, they're not really owners of land or be able to buy land, and that they're just a place where you can go and borrow the money for you individually to buy land. So these banks, they serve so many purposes for us that it's almost like we won't survive unless we do have some black banks in our communities to help us take care of those daily needs that we need that's ongoing with the society and that. And we need all kind of businesses in our community. And for our listeners, this is what the New Africa Black Belt Wall Street Business Association is all about, promoting and networking African-American businesses. And we also want to get members to be a part of our network. And our network, again, is networking businesses and introducing new businesses over our network. One of the things, I've been on this blog show with Brother Bilal since the inception, and it's going on 10 years. And one of the things I didn't realize, because when Brother Bilal set the show up, was that I've been on the show all the time, but I wasn't actually a member. I'm talking about someone that actually got a membership into the organization, and not being one that just helped start it, but actually being a member. And that's something for all our listeners to think about, is actually being a member. You know, we may come on and talk and have things to say just off in the comment or whatever, but more than listening, being a member is what's helping, what's going to help keep the program going on. It does cost to keep the program going on, and we always like to get some contributions if somebody just want to contribute something on behalf of keeping the New Africa Black Belt Business Wall Street Business Association going on. Of course, we like that. But members, being members, if you're a business individual or, you know, just a group of individuals that would like to express something, you know, become a member, and you have time to come on our show and express whatever it is that you want to share with the community. And we hope it's business, because that's what our program is about. Business, bringing money back into our community through supporting businesses, establishing businesses, as well as funding and putting our deposits, our monies in places, credit unions, African-American credit unions, African-American financial institutions, banks, investing in our community. And then ask that bank to invest back into our community. That's the way that goes. And that's the way it is with the larger banks and the Caucasian community. They get the monies back from the banks. They're able to get the monies they need to improve their homes, as well as buy new homes. And then it's always when the bank loans out money to a person, it's based on a number of things outside of your credit rating. Your credit rating sometimes may be not up to high standards, but there are other qualities about you that a bank or institution will consider in loaning you some money. But the way it is today with African Americans going to these big banks and that, they're being discriminated against immensely. They can have the same qualifications as a Caucasian have, but when it comes to getting that money for financial, to get a home or for whatever, 9 times out of 10, they're likely to get turned down. This is not me saying this. This is just surveys that have been taken around to prove that this is a fact. So in investing in an African-American institution and empowering them more, with our deposits and that, that's what allowed them to also have those same type of considerations when they want to loan us some money to make a home improvement. Whatever the need may be, it may be that other considerations are given also where they're going and let us have them. And that's all about banking and financing in our community. But getting back to the main point of how our program got started, and that is, again, promoting African-American business, new ones, old ones, promoting them, as well as getting them to network with other African-American people or people that are interested in going in the type of business you're going, you have established already, even though you may be living in different parts of the country, the same state, or, you know, different cities within the state. That's what we're about, reaching out to all of the different African-American businesses there within the DMZ as well as nationwide to give us a call. Let us know about your business. Join up with us, and we'll promote you. We'll do everything we can to let everybody know about your business. That's how the networking goes. The networking is where people tell other people about things that they know concerning in the business world that they may have interest to, and it goes on like that. And that type of communication is what the New Africa Black Belt Business Wall, Black Belt Wall Street Business Association is about. And that's my start for the day, Brother Pavan. I don't want to crowd it all up and let our other director go into it before we get it to its feet.
Thank you. We definitely appreciate your comments, and we will continue our comments after we, like you said, have all of our directors. We're going to go now to our educational director, our national educational director. She's from Delaware. But when it comes to national education, she represents the nation as far as Black Belt Wall Street and New Africa Business Association is concerned. So with that said, I'll go right on to the source. Miss Bernice Swan, proud to say she's my sister. Sis, we appreciate your comments.
Well, good evening. And I want you to know that the project that we're working on, it, of course, it will be a national project. Both of us, both directors, are working diligently on a very worthwhile project. Of course, we will keep the details to ourselves until we see everything of this puzzle coming together, and it is coming together beautifully. I would like to say this, as we keep some things close to us until we see which directions we want to go with many things that we have in mind for working with these black-owned banks. First of all, I think it's important to know that there are 19 states that do not have African-American-owned banks. And, of course, as we start revealing more information from our research and from our project, we will share these things. But there are 19 states that do not at all have African-American-owned banks. And so for those of our in our black community who wonder, what should I do if that is the case with me? Well, the good thing about banking now is everybody knows it's online. And so even if your own state doesn't have this kind of opportunity for you, you can still be affiliated with an African-American-owned bank. Now, the states, there are 19 of them, that do not have African-American-owned banks or credit unions are Alaska, Arizona, Colorado, Connecticut, Delaware, Hawaii, Iowa, Maine, Nebraska, Nevada, New Hampshire, New Mexico, North Dakota, Rhode Island, Utah, Vermont, Washington, and Wyoming. That does not mean that our African American community will therefore not have access to working with our African American owned banks, because later on you will know through our project exactly how you can still be affiliated with one of our banks in support of our community through our own banks via having your online banking. We have also a way of communicating now with those states that do have the banks, and this is where we are working now, with those states that do have the African-American-owned banks for two reasons, to bring them onto the program so that they can talk about what they have to offer to our African-American community. That is where we are now in the process of communicating with those 32 banks, states that have African-American banks. So we will be giving you updates on our progress there because we want those owners of African-American banks and credit unions to come on and actually tell what they can offer in, as you are selecting the bank that you want to use. But we know that will have to be a big step. I don't know where everybody might be now with where they are. I found out that people don't even know there's such a thing as African-American-owned banks. So that in and of itself is an education. But now once we let you know these states that have them, at least one, then we're going to proceed to have them come on our show, on our broadcast, and tell you what they have to offer. There are other things you will be learning about this, but not at this time. This is where we are now. It's going beautifully. There will be works through the sororities, fraternities, widespread with churches, and other organizations that we will be pulling into our project, because how we will communicate to all of these states will be a very simple way, but it will be a very, very effective way of getting this information out to all of the communities. And I'm working on that artwork as we speak. But it's going very well, and I'm putting it prayerfully in the Creator's hands. And, you know, when you put it in His hands, it's going to work. So thank you for the opportunity to work on this project, and I will be keeping you updated.
And Director Swan, I want to say that you're falling in line exactly with what we been proposing to put together. So what you are working on and continue to work on is that proposal that we've been putting together, because not only will our proposal be these banks that exist, but of course create new banks. But the creation of these new banks, we feel like the federal government and these huge grants that they talked about, that Brother Aziz and I went down to the Department of Commerce, that we was invited by Joe Biden, our president, and our president said that the reasons he was having these meetings all over the country, not only here in Washington, D.C., but just about every region where African-Americans live in this country, these going on. And Sister Ali, she attended one of them, I know, in one of our regions, and I see where she's with us, and she will be more than happy to tell to talk about her experience. But we went directly to the one here in Washington, D.C. This is where they had the heads of all of the departments that represents Biden's administration, the Department of Commerce, the Department of State, Department of Agriculture, Department of every last one of them here in Washington, D.C., was present at this meeting. and all of them proposed that they had billions of dollars ready to be appropriated to the African-American community. So we're going to see why we can't get these monies appropriated since they said they have this money. Our proposal is going to be presented to whomever it takes to have the large amount of monies, like I said, that is being simply taken from us. As soon as we put it in the banks, they take it. And we're going to see why the federal government, and since Joe Biden says he have an interest in our economical development, then why don't we have banks in our communities where we can make our own deposits in our own banks in our communities? And it's quite sad, but I'm not a surprise that Delaware, the home of Joe Biden, our president, the home of those who said he wants economic opportunity for African Americans, why isn't there a financial institution somewhere in the state of Delaware as to where African Americans can have financial freedom, especially when it comes to their own monies? So wonderful introduction, and keep on working. Working on it and working on it, because we're talking about something that, frankly, no black politicians, no black anybody has ever stepped up to the plate and demanded fair economic opportunities. Fair because we're not asking nobody to give us any entitlements. We only ask that you stop taking what belongs to us and using it for your own economical advantages. So a wonderful introduction, and we look forward to your being able to make your completions. We definitely look forward to the bankers coming on as to where we will hear from them, and we have them in our archives as to where we can continue to play to our public what these bankers are proposing if they had deposits into their banks, and then of course the growth, because like you said, if I think you named the 21 banks or whatever, you these 21 banks in a month should be 221 banks. And every month, hundreds of, and I'm saying this is just a duplicating yourself. So the Omegas have a bank, then the Omegas should have 100 banks. If the sororities have a bank, then the sororities should have 100 banks. And now you see where I'm going with this. So that one or two banks we have in each state, it should be these one or two banks, they should duplicate themselves into hundreds. And because when it comes to, that's how powerful our deposits, if they start being made in our communities, you're going to need hundreds of banks to receive the huge amount of deposits that we put into the Caucasian's banks, and this is just about every day, but certainly on the weekends. So with that said, now I am going to, let me see, do we have a director out of, do we have an Oklahoma director? Ms. Williams, are you with us? Ms. Williams, director out of Oklahoma, are you with us? I guess not. Okay, with that said, then I am going to, and I don't see what Brother Rashid is with us. I don't see what Brother Rashid is with us, but hopefully he will come on sooner or later. Go right ahead.
I was going to say, Brother Bilal, Sister Swan and I had a fantastic talk about the banks and all that, you know, as you and I talked about before.
Yes.
And I was going to say the game plan is that Sister Swan is in control of all of that now. I told her that you and I be willing to, you know, participate wherever, you know, she wanted us to participate in that, you know, and because the way she's implementing the program and going to implement it, like bringing the bankers on and talking to us and everything, and it's a great work. It's a good work, and, you know, and I look forward to that, brother. I really, really do.
All right, Brother Isaiah. Well, I'm certain Director Swan appreciates your comments. I certainly appreciate your comments, but again, I have all the confidence in the world in all of my directors. I say mine's because you guys made me the chair. And so in that case, I have confidence in all of the directors, and we all are going to do what we can do best. I am not going to get out of my lane and start going into a lane that I have no business in. I know what my profession is. I know what when I talk finance, it's because I'm trained in finance. And I've been training in finance for over 40 years. I have all kinds of, I can't show you how many CE certificates I have from different educational institutions where we have to pass these credits in order to keep our license. And I've been, as a business association, I know what my lane is, and again, having the title as a leader, I try to show my managerial experiences, but again, when it comes to leaders, that's why we have the directors, including yourself, Brother Aziz. You know what I tell you. Mm-hmm. Are a director,
yeah.
Out and direct. If there is something wrong, then we can, as professionals, we can talk about it. But go out and direct. That's why you're a director. So with that said, thanks so much. I'm certain Sister Swan is, and she'll be coming back. I'm certain she appreciates your comments. But with that said, I am going to move right along and bring in my dear sister, our national director, sister director, Dr. Ali, Professor Ali. Any kind of title you want to give this lady, I'm willing to go along with it. But because, again, this is what our directors, this is our professional, and I can almost say I'm proud of all of you. But Sister Ali, let me just stop running my mouth, and I say welcome to our show, and I look forward to your comments. But I think that we brought up a subject about you're going to Joe Biden's regional meeting, and I spoke of the one to Brother Aziz. But anyway, Sister Ali.
Assalamu alaikum. Good evening, everyone. Thank you.
Thank
you very much. And Sister Swan, Director Swan, I want to thank you so very much. Last week, the information that you brought forth and the research that you and Brother Rashid are undertaking, I took it very personal, and it really touched my heart, because 30 years ago, when I started, 35 years ago, as a very young woman starting in business, I didn't have much knowledge of how the banking and the federal contracting system worked. But I went to Mechanics and Farmers Bank in Raleigh, North Carolina. Mr. Sampson, I told that he was the director of the bank, and I said, I'm going to bid on a contract with the state of North Carolina, but I don't understand the money flow. I don't understand, and I don't have any money to procure the contract or to assure it. And this man was so gracious. He recognized that I truly did not know what I was doing, and he told me that if I get the contract, to bring the contract to him, and he would teach me every aspect of dealing with contracts. He would open my account, and he will make sure that I learn how to manage it. And Director Swan, this is the learning steps that the black bank directors at that time, and possibly still will do the same thing. They helped us who were starting in business. We had a desire, we had the energy, but we didn't have the knowledge. But he made sure that by the time I got that contract and other contracts, I understood how to do contracting on a federal, state, and a private level. So I went to many other cities, lived in many other places, and I got away from the black banks. I didn't think about it anymore. But when you talked last week, and the brothers were talking about the benefit of the black bank and how we need to support them, I had to look at myself. And so thank you for turning me around, because that's how I got my start. And of course, I was very embarrassed after hearing what you were saying, and I want to compliment you all. So just stay right in there working with those banks, and I'm certainly on board. And once again, I thank you so much, and I told this story to my daughters, and they said, oh, well, we never thought about the black bank, but they are thinking about it now with their company. So thank you, Sister Swan, so much.
Yes, and now North Carolina has two, you know. There's Mechanics and Farmers, and there's also the Greater Kingston. But all of this information will be conveyed in a much broader scale as we continue with the art project on this. You will be delighted with what we're doing.
Well, thank you. Well, I'm certainly with North Mechanics and Farmers. They are just a few blocks away, so they're very close. And this is the branch in Durham. However, it started in Raleigh, and at one time they had over 13 branches throughout North Carolina. And they were the instrumental, the financial backing for the group that started North Carolina Mutual Life Insurance Company that still exists today to some extent. So they were the third Black Wall Street from throughout our history. It ended up in Durham, North Carolina, from Oklahoma to Atlanta, then to Durham. And it was the same people. So thank you so much.
Wow.
Okay. So
we will be working from.
Go ahead.
Since I am the educational director, and I've already contacted a university. But we will be working with our young people who are in the business departments because they are unaware of many things that we're talking about. So that's going to be expansive, too, as we deal with, especially at our universities and HBCUs. They will understand this component of necessity, and that's another part of the project.
Oh, that's excellent. So when you come down to North Carolina and start working directly with any of these banks, please do don't hesitate to call on me, and if you need me to go up there to the banks and take your word or your message, I will be more than happy to do so. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Yes. So all this week, this has been an interesting week. And yes, Brother Bilal, I did attend the Southeast Regions conference that was held in November. And that was part of the same initiative that the Biden administration was trying to bring people together, African-American people, people who had voted for him in the past, together with some, well, I got a lot of information from this particular regional conference. There were over 50 representatives there from Washington, that from the different departments, 50. There was a huge crowd because it represented the entire Southeast region, which consisted of the states of Alabama, Florida, Georgia, Kentucky, Mississippi, North Carolina, South Carolina, Tennessee. These were the states that were represented by nonprofits and for-profits, and it was a huge audience. Friday, Saturday, and Sunday for 3 days. So, of course, a lot of information was circulated, and there are these nonprofits in Washington, D.C. that want to work with the for-profits and the nonprofits to assist them in getting grants. This is their mission. So I will send some of this information up to Brother Bilal and see how he wants to work with it or see how we can utilize this group that came into Durham to hold this huge conference. And they talked about the billions of dollars in grants, of which most of us know about, but they facilitate community groups getting these grants and helping them get their proposals together and whatnot. So it was very helpful. I think unlike the one that you went to, Brother Bilal and Brother Aziz, but this was very good. So I would like as much participation from the audience. Ask me questions about this next discussion that I'm going to have. It's regarding... We are working with local governments. We recognize that climate change and disaster preparedness is a tremendously large undertaking in that only 20%.
Sister Ali.
Yes.
I don't want to stop you, but you... In about 7 more minutes, you go on the air. And, of course...
Oh, okay. I'm early. Okay.
Yes, ma'am. You just a little... I want to acknowledge you because I always do.
Stop me, please. I'm glad you stopped me because when you acknowledge me, I think it's my turn, but that's okay.
Ma'am,
I can wait. Okay, that's fine.
You will be taking over. But right now, I got 7 more minutes, Brother Aziz and myself in the chair.
Yeah.
Take as much time as you want.
Appreciate it.
Okay. I believe Nadir may be on now.
We look forward to getting right back with you.
Take as much time as you need, because, you know, I can talk forever. Go right ahead. Yeah. Take more time.
We appreciate you. I want to, at this time, I think Brother Rashid looked like he might be with us. So,
yes.
Again, our Delaware State Director, Brother Rashid, are you with us?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Assalamu alaikum to you and everybody listening in the audience. Hey, man, it's good to be with family. My apologies, man. I had a long day. I mean, when I tell you I just got home, it was one of those days, and actually got my mind rejuvenated by Miss Bernice, you know, just everything she's been doing and what we've been working on together. So I'm happy to be on the call, and my apologies for being this late into the call.
We welcome you.
Welcome, definitely.
Welcome you. Any comments you'd like to make?
Well, I mean, like I said, I was thinking about what Sister Aisha had mentioned, and I did. I have not reached the gentleman yet, and I have it in my notes, but I don't have that with me. But I did, Sister Aisha, get the contact of the young man here in Delaware that handles, you know, what you were talking about. So my goal is to reach him and actually build some rapport and actually, you know, I guess I'll seek some guidance in, you know, what would be the benefits and the things that he could provide, or, you know, especially with our neighborhoods in Delaware, and see specifically, is he targeting more areas or certain areas than others? I haven't been able to reach him yet, but I do have the contact.
Very good.
And other than that, Brother Bilal, I would just like to encourage everybody to invite more people to listen to the radio broadcast, and for us to really know you're empowering part two or three now with the Black Dollar. So, you know, us implementing these things that we're talking about, I think now is the time. So with that, I'll shift it back to you guys to do what you're doing.
Thanks so much. I want to
thank you.
Go back to Sister Swan and just let her know that they are having a real big African American history program that I sort of heard through the grapevine. But Sister Swan, I want you to know that with your invitation and along with the others that you are associated with, I would like for as many of our directors to come to your program. I came to it last year, and I certainly was so impressed with the program you guys put together during Black History Month, and to especially with and the education that the Caucasians receive from such an intelligent program, such a informative program. So if you would, with your permission, I would like to invite our state directors. And I know for Sister Aisha, it's a distance for her, so we won't put her through this. But Brother Aziz and Brother Rashid is a good possibility. They just may show up. And this is something that they didn't think I was going to make this announcement. I didn't even think I was going to make this announcement until I heard about what you guys are going to be doing for Black History Month. And after
being
there,
our calendar is full, and of course we were very pleased with the large numbers of whites who are now very much wanting to know Black history. And you're right, last year was a huge success, newspaper coverage and so forth. this year is even more expanded. It's going to be wonderful. And the culminating of the Black History presentation, of course, that is done by our other sister and your niece. It is going to have all of the centers closed so that one center will be open. All of those centers will attend the one event that your precious sister, niece, and others have put together. Of course, the production, the presentation I did last year is a different one this year. I also want to share with you that I'm working through our Delaware State University, because I'm hoping to have at least, and this will be next year, but I'm working with them this year because, I have many plays, and I'm looking to have the young people at that campus to do at least two, maybe three of my plays. And so I'm meeting with that gentleman next week. The other thing is I am already involved with some presentations at the Delaware State University, and I'll be sharing with you that's going to be delightful because I do rap. As an English teacher, when I was teaching, I educationally taught them many times through rap, not as some people see rap and, you know, in terms of the negative. It was always in the positive. So I present Black history to them via rap. And, of course, I'll be doing that at the college campus starting next week.
Excellent, excellent. Well, again, like I said, if you can get a couple of spectators in there, we would love to be those.
I'll give you the calendar of events then. I'll send it to you.
Brother Aziz, if you don't have any objections, we're going to switch over to, it's 8 o'clock. It's time for Sister Ali's her show now.
It's the second most interesting part of the show. By all means, let's go.
Well, thank you all very much.
Yes, ma'am. Go right ahead, Sister Ali. Good evening.
So, good evening. So the next time, Brother Bilal, when you just acknowledge that I'm on the line, I will not think it's time for me to start talking. I'll look at the clock, okay? So, but I want to thank I can't thank Sister Swan enough for reminding me of where I started from. So thank you once again, my sister, and Brother Rashid, with the project that you all are working on. This has been an interesting week. Just recently, we have been talking to local government about the one locally here in Durham, about the infrastructure that is at risk during a natural disaster. Many, and of course, we will continue to communicate with them, but they had not thought of the infrastructure so much because they, like most local governments and federal governments and county and state governments, they think of sustainable infrastructure. But sustainable infrastructure, as we pointed out, is impossible unless you take some initial steps. Because once there's a natural disaster, and we have the data and statistics that prove this, the infrastructure is challenged by the devastation of the people. Every aspect, practically, health care, transportation, the electric grids, the communication grids, water, sewer, all of these systems that support, that make up the infrastructure of the local government will be challenged. Some of them will actually break down. When one part of the infrastructure breaks down, it puts more stress and strain on the other facilities and services in order to hold the system together. And so if you have a tremendous what you classify as a sustainable infrastructure, you have not tested that necessarily during a natural disaster. And we know in academia, and I know Sister Swan knows this, that what we teach and what we, the principles that we operate from are not necessarily reality, because reality changes so constantly. But many, a lot of the academic material does not keep up with that change. And since we are in a new life of disaster, climate change disasters, we have got to start thinking differently. And this was the message to local government. So how do local governments develop sustainable infrastructure? This is very important because that's going to affect all of our lives during a storm in every city. When the storms come into your area, the first thing, if you are not prepared for it, first thing you're going to do is call on the local government to supply you with this, to assist you with this, and to help you in every possible way. Well, that's not going to work going into the future. So we have to take a step backwards, and that is to the point where we build within the community, the whole community concept of resilient communities. You have to have resilient communities, people who are able to fend for themselves, not 3 days, not 72 hours like FEMA said during Katrina time. Now it's 6 days to a week that you're going to be on your own with your family and with your hardship and with your community, not 3 days, because the sustainable system of the federal government agencies such as FEMA is coming under attack from the number of disasters throughout the country that they have to deal with. So in order for the community to be resilient, they're going to have to know some things. They're going to have to go through an exercise of what, how, and when. The what is understanding the nature of the disaster. What does it mean? How one disaster delivers consequences for other disasters. The what is extremely important. The next step is the how. You have to be prepared through planning. You've got to have a plan. We have, in our lives, we have a plan for everything. We have a plan for getting up in the morning, what we're going to wear to work, what we're going to eat for dinner, all of this. We plan our entire life step by step. So we know how to plan. We just have to put those elements in the plan that relate to natural disaster. And then, of course, we have to know when to act. We have to know, are we going to evacuate or shelter in place? And if we are going to evacuate or shelter, we have got to understand the alerts. Talking to people, I'm amazed that in their state, different states have different alert signals. It might be 1, 2, or 3. In most states, it's at least 3. But you have to know what they are and what they mean. So you can evacuate, or you can hunker down and shelter. So we say to the local government, we have to get back to a time where people are self-sufficient. That's the only way we're going to protect the infrastructure and how we're going to make the families resilient. So, and please do stop me if this is not clear in any way. One of the things we, if you're anyone on this broadcast that's 50 years old or older, you understand what segregation was about. During segregation, we had to be self-sufficient. Our lives were tailored around our community, helping each other, and knowing how to survive during the winter. So we were self-sufficient because we didn't have access to services. There was no services in my community until I was in high school and in many communities. But we have gotten out of that mode. We are not self-sufficient as a community of people. We are very dependent on the services from our local government. But that's not going to happen during a disaster. So we have to take a few steps back and become a resilient community, resilient meaning the ability to bounce back. I often see this commercial on television. I think that all of you all have seen it. There's an African-American lady standing there. Obviously, a natural disaster has occurred, and she's in a pink and white type of dress. And she made a comment. She said, "It's all gone," pointing to her house and everything. She said, "But we are here. We're still here." And that's resilience. That's what we have to get back to. So local government are beginning to look at their sustainable infrastructure development and rethinking it. But we have to play a part in the community. We're going to have to take care of ourselves for at least 6 to 7 days after the storm, before the government, FEMA, or any other agency can get to us. I keep up with the people in Lahaina, and they are really devastated because they do not have the ability quickly to identify themselves. So they are being told to get behind the line for assistance. The people who were devastated with Katrina are still, many of them, 38,000 families still have not received the promise of housing assistance and reimbursement. And there are, although many of them had homeowners insurance, many of the insurance companies are walking away from these cities. They are declaring bankruptcy, and they are just walking away. So I can't say enough about how important it is for us to give disaster preparedness great consideration in your community. Another of the areas that we're stressed in is we need to duplicate ourselves. So for the year 2024, we're hoping that we will have at least 25 trainers, preparedness trainers, who are certified to train hundreds of people in the community. This is a whole community effort. Our trainers, we are responsible for training the trainers, the future trainers. Columbia University will issue the certification. This is a FEMA certification, and we're only requiring level 1 and 2 certification. My certification is a level 4. I'm certified in housing recovery and disaster and preparedness. We want our trainers to be certified in preparedness at level 1 and 2. But this is a new industry that's really developing tremendously. The need is great. So if you all know anyone, any place in the country who would like to talk to me about becoming a trainer, and you'll be a private, you'll be an independent consultant to our company here. If you know anyone who wants to go into this career, please let me know, because we are in dire need to start training 25 to 50 people this year to be trainers. So if this sounds like something that you think is feasible, please let me know. The training is the training is free to the person, but the person will be able to go into the communities and train the constituent base, faith-based organizations, both virtually and in person, community groups, fraternal groups, local government employees. It's a tremendous industry that's developing, and we're not seeing it. We're not talking about it from a business aspect, but it's overwhelming to us already. So any comments but I want to say we are working with local governments, and we are amazingly, when we talk to the mayor and the council, how they say, we never thought about the infrastructure during a natural disaster. And in their plan for the year, they have a statement about sustainable infrastructure, but they never thought about how their infrastructure can break down completely during a natural disaster. So it says to me that we're just not thinking as a society. So any comments on anything that I've said?
Yes, ma'am. Sister Aisha, this is Brother Nadir. What are the qualifications for anyone we may know who is interested in becoming a trainer? What are the qualifications they have to even be considered?
Well, Columbia requires for the way with their they are contracted with FEMA, okay, to administer the test. In order to pass that test at a level 1 or 2, a 100, 200 level, is incumbent upon the person to have a bachelor's degree. Now, when we train the person, we're going to, our training module is in compliance with the certification requirement, and we will train you on that. But the model for the training for the community is based on that certification. So at least we prefer a bachelor's degree. If you do not, if the person does not have a bachelor's degree, we can talk about it. Because there are many people who are extremely smart and astute. They might not be able to get certain certifications, but it does not mean that they cannot train at maybe a different level. we want people who are savvy, who can talk and have some knowledge of the using Zoom, because you're going to have virtual sessions. You might have a virtual session in California, a group in California, and there will be limited in-person training, but most of it will be virtual. You are an independent contractor with us, and you are given an assignment that to train a group, and depending on the pace by which we continue to get requests, you could work, you know, twice a day, 3 hours a day or 2 hours a day, maybe 3 to 4 days a week. And the pay is very good. It's extremely, extremely good. Okay.
So
does that answer your question?
Yes, ma'am. Thank you so much.
Okay. So if you know people, start getting in touch with me. I think all of you all have my number, 919-225-7205. And let's have a conversation. And this yes, go ahead.
From hearing what you just explained, and of course I've heard, you know, we've been talking about this, and you've been training us even to some extent. So as many things that many of us who's been listening to you now for about a year that we realize, but after after hearing your explanation just a few moments ago about the disaster and, of course, the mitigation of the disaster, it was the language that you was exposing. And like I said, we've heard you for over a year, but this time hearing you, I'm hearing a language, especially after going to like you said, you went to the regional proposals that was given by the Department of Commerce and all of the other agencies. We went here to Washington, D.C., where the head of the agencies, but saying that to say, we know that the federal government was asking for information. And that's the biggest thing that they're giving grants for, is information, because like they admitted, the information that they can hear from the communities is information that they can collect and they can use to put together many of their programs.
Yes.
So, again, hearing your proposal for training, but hearing your proposal, period, I am wondering why not put in for the grant and give the federal government the information that they don't have, and like you said, the information that they're seeking, the information that they admit that we didn't know about this. We wish we are expressing information that is very valuable to federal, and of course, if it's valuable to the federal governments, it's very valuable to the local and state governments. So It sounds reasonable that we put together a grant and put and give them the language that they don't have, and let them know that here is the language well enough to receive the grant. But the pudding, the ingredients is in the pudding, and those ingredients is something that we have. But the language of the grant and hearing what you had to say, that language need to be sent. That language need to be put into an announcement and sent to the federal government, and we're requiring a grant to educate every region in this country. And, of course,
absolutely,
that we're training, when you say about 90 or 9 or what have you, is a very small figure, but it's a figure to start with. But as far as those who are qualified and those that you can train and get certified, because this is what the government told us that they wanted. They told us everything you talked about is exactly what they said they wanted, and they're willing to put up large amounts of monies because they don't have the answers. And your 40 years, and like you said, level ones and level twos, and you can go up to the highest level. That's what should get us our grant.
Well, that's, I agree.
And that's what should those who are talking about being trainers, and I know, and just like you know, that those who are trained, yes, as far as the salary is a very large salary, it has to be, because of all the regions that you would be responsible for. But at the same time, those same, and I hate to say it because I don't need nobody doing any backstabbing, but those who are trained could even get grants.
Absolutely.
Because it's so big. And so what the training that you're giving are that the New Africa and Summit Summit cooperation, like I said, from what the explanation that I just heard you explain to us needs to be on paper.
Okay.
We need it. That's my comment.
Well, I certainly agree with you, and I think that the nonprofit division part of New Africa Business Association is in a catbird seated to submit the grant. As you know, we are a for-profit, but you all will just simply contract with us to do the work, do the training.
Yeah.
But
no,
you all will. Yes, that is the relation. That is the idea relationship, and it's idea because you all are financial people, and that within itself will say to the federal government, we don't have to worry about misappropriation, whether intentionally or unintentionally, of the fund. The proper usage of the fund will be maintained. And you will be able to, you know.
Oh, no. We've been bringing our financial planners. We've been bringing our estate planners. we would bring in our CPAs, and we would bring in our economics. And like I said, within that time, some of the my sister and them, they're going to the universities and speaking to the business administration departments. You see, this is what our economics would create. It would create all of those professionals who are studying economics, econ, marketing, salesmanship. You name it. All of these studies that they're studying in the universities, they would now be able to get jobs in all of these fields because all of these jobs would be in demand. But right now, this is what this would be opening up. We need to go after, and I go after the grants. And we already have professionals that would work with you. Like you said, as far as the economical parts of the grants, we've done that before. But as far as the wordings of that grant, that's where we would need you. And once two are put together, now we can submit.
Absolutely. Well, I am in the process of actually identifying the grants that are now available, and some of them will be available later. We always want to make sure we get in before the expiration date. And there's an organization right up there by you all. It's called Community First. It's right there in D.C. They're the ones that put the regional conference on. They hosted it along with Thrive, and which is another organization right there in the D.C. area. And these are African-American consultant groups. They are nonprofits. And they reached out to me and want to work and want to know how we can work together. Now, they're in D.C. They have all the connections to identify the grant to work with.
I can give you one, even to go along with it. Some of the African Americans that was the heads of these departments, they may not have been the secretary of the departments, but they certainly ran the departments. They was at the highest level in their government grade and profession. And they spoke to Brother Aziz and I personally, and they told us, and we have their information, that if we should decide to go after these grants, they would be more than happy to in other words, give them a good a business idea of what we are trying to do, and they would help us tremendously. And these are the ones that spoke at these. These were the ones that spoke at Biden's economical proposal, and of course they were. And their bosses was right there to make sure that they delivered their message very intelligently and very clear, and which they did, but at the same time, they spoke to us behind the curtains.
Well, You see, and that's what we need, because you know and I know that sometimes people get your ideas and your structure and they run with it and present it for themselves.
And
I'm sure that has happened to most of all of us in the past.
So what you're saying is something that the federal government is even trying to do itself.
Yeah.
They're trying to collect.
Yeah.
And again, what are they, like they said, the information that they collect, what they find to be valuable to them, they will keep and they'll pay for.
They have set aside where you don't even have to go through the grant process.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
So, but again, I think that our language, because like you said, you have experience that they don't have. You've been around a long time, and they don't have connections to the directors who's been around for 20 and 30 and 40 years. These directors, many of them have died. They're not around it, but these young directors don't know them. So we have one on our team, and I think we can, we're fortunate, but I think we can pull a real big value from this. And
okay.
I think we can go for that grant.
Well, would you like for me to send you some, what do you think should be the very next step?
I would like for you to concentrate on putting the grant together and your explanation. And I will go to my business folks, and we would put together like you should, showing that we can deal with the funds because we have the experience of dealing with large amounts of monies and distributing large amounts of monies. And I think, like you said, between knowing that the government, knowing that they can dispense of a large grant, and then they have the valuable information that they were willing to be paying for the grant, I think we have the pieces to get this grant issued.
Okay. Well, let me work on that, and I have to say that this is a tremendous new industry that is just developing. Very few companies and nonprofits are in this particular industry, and it is an industry that touched the life of everybody in the United States and outside of the U.S. because we have no control over the climate change and the disasters. And I think many of our people are frightened to even talk about it. And I noticed that at the conference. They would rather talk about something else a little more obsolete than the reality of climate change, because it causes fear within many people. So I think that we as African-American people, we like to we are the kind of people who can come into a new industry, and we have vision. And I think that this is something that we should really jump into. And there's another aspect of this that we are also involved in, and that is the e-commerce aspect of it. One of the strategies in preparedness is readiness. Readiness means you're simply ready to make a decision, evacuate or shelter in place. But whether you evacuate or shelter in place, you need supplies. You need certain products. As Sister Swan mentioned, several months ago. We don't, and we operate by supplying the already pre-packaged emergency kit with the supplies in it. That's where we are. But, of course, people can do it themselves. But that is a whole that's an industry that is developing very rapidly. And we are in that industry, not completely, because I haven't had the chance and I need more staff. But that is an industry that we should really get into, because it's not going to go away. It's just going to continue to grow. And many of the nonprofits have already said, faith-based groups have already said that, okay, we will assist 100, one said 100 members of their congregation to get the supplies they need. The, you know, they have to prove that they're, you know, based on their income. So if they're going to assist 100 people for now, then that will continue, because everybody in the congregation needs an emergency kit, including the pastor. And so that's just the extent of this new industry. And we got to get into it as a people. We've got to, and this is something that we can have a big footprint. And I hate to think of an industry being created over hardship of people, but that's the reality of what we are talking about. So I will put together some narratives for you to look at, you and Brother Aziz to look at, and the rest of the directives. And without putting so much content, and then once we have identified the revenue source, then we can put the content to the overall outline or statement. How is that?
Sounds great.
Sounds wonderful. You have several listeners that came on while you were speaking, I noticed. So I didn't know how you wanted to greet.
Well, please to greet you, go right ahead, and they can chime right into the conversation. We'll be happy to hear their opinion and their comments and questions.
So I have the mics open to all of our listeners at this point. So anyone who can hear us, we have our mics open as to where now you can participate and we can hear you. And like Director Aisha just said, we welcome your comments. So anyone who have any comments, we welcome your comments.
In the meantime, while people are thinking about, is that someone on the line? It sounds like I hear somebody.
We welcome your comments.
I was going to ask, I had one question, and I don't know if it's a negative thing, but it just crossed my mind. You know, there are those who are going to some degree, comply with exactly what you said. Each individual home, have your own, those who are going to be advocates of just speak of preparedness. Now, for those who will have these supplies in case of emergency, everybody will need the supplies. What is done about the safety and the safeguarding of those emergency supplies? Because those who are not prepared, or those who want to take advantage of those things that are stored, has that been given any kind of consideration? Because we know there are going to be those who will not have respect for what has been set aside for emergency needs. How is that storage of these supplies and the safeguarding of those supplies handled?
Well, the individual families are responsible for their own emergency kits. The pre-assembled ones, all of the emergency kits that we are working with from our supplier, our manufacturer, they have the water and the dehydrated packaged food have a shelf life of 5 years in every emergency kit. Individual families are responsible for their own. As far as large organizations, they are responsible for, if they choose this responsibility, but basically every individual is responsible for having their own emergency kit. But some of the organizations, the nonprofit specialist based groups, they will buy in bulk. They will buy bulk water pouches, not water bottles, water pouches. The pouches contain 4 to 6 ounces of water in each pouch, okay? And they will have that in storage. And, of course, it has a shelf life, expiration date, and whatnot on it. The same as dehydrated food bars. Everything, and they can store this. It takes a lot of space to store enough water in bottles for 200 or 300 people. But in pouches, it takes maybe 1/4 of that space. So this is where manufacturers are going and suppliers are going to. They're coming away from the bottled water, okay, the plastic bottle, and going into the pouches.
My concern then is once desperation sets in, let's say that we do have the organizations that will also have these supplies, let's say for their church or whatever, they're in desperation, there will be those who will steal these things. Is there some sort of way people can safeguard what they are setting aside with the pre-assembled? Because, you know, once a disaster hits, desperation hits for those who have not done what you're saying.
And you're absolutely right. There is statistics that show that the crime rate, theft, goes up tremendously during a natural disaster. So you're absolutely right. We have no responsibility for them securing the products that they have purchased already. We can make recommendations that they have a special closet or a special facility where they store things. But each institution is responsible for delivering that safety for any of their products that they have on hand. And
thank you for sharing that, because those who are going to assume, and it's a wonderful thing that they are going to be just not thinking about their own families, but thinking on a broader scale, but those who are not so humanitarian are only going to be thinking about themselves and their own when they are not prepared. And so we have to have something where we can let these people know, don't let this be too publicized, because there are those out in the public who are going to take advantage of what they had not self-prepared.
Well, some of the larger churches we are finding, they have someone who volunteers in this capacity of doing the bait sales and doing the food pantry and whatnot. So we're saying to them, bring that person on board as an employee and give that person the responsibility of making sure that the supplies, the disaster supplies, are protected and secured. And they like the idea, even if they brought the person on part-time. But bring that person on. They already have the skill level because they've been doing it, many of them, for volunteers for years.
Mm-hmm.
And so those are some of the recommendations that we are making to especially faith-based groups, because they do have the resources. Not one has told me that they did not have the resources. Not a one. Isn't mm-hmm. that something? So they have it. They have the resources. So
and now to protect them, that's the main thing, to protect them when this when greater emergencies occur. They're already occurring in smaller scales, not a major disaster, but in smaller scales, you're already seeing how people are breaking into what people thought were their secure pods and so forth, and
right.
and people clean them out.
And that, and we're also concerned about the homeless. Case in point, right here in Durham, North Carolina, a nonprofit group did a survey, and they said, they released the result of the survey, and they said that there are 2,000 homeless people in Durham, in the city of Durham. Well, and of course, the number of people including myself, we kind of challenge that because we know it's hard to count the homeless,
right?
So there, that 2,000 people who they have identified are as homeless, that's going to be a critical population during a natural disaster. They're the ones that are the most vulnerable. They're the bodies that you unfortunately might see lying in the street. And so we have to, and that's going to cause other problems. So we have to help find a mechanism to help that population if they want to come out of the places where they go and sort of like hide away. And every city has this issue. What will we do with the homeless population when the natural disaster come into our area? And we've and not none of us so far have in the groups that I've talked to have come up with a plan. It's difficult, but it's an issue we as a society and as a community are going to have to deal with.
So, Sister Aisha, this is Nadir in Delaware. Once I reach the Delaware State Hazard Mitigation Officer, I think it's SHMO, that acronym, am I basically trying to find out from that person how New Africa Black Belt Wall Street can apply for, I remember you saying, was it, mitigation grant programs, HMGP, BRIC, and FMA.
Which one are you talking about? What state?
Delaware.
What state?
Delaware.
Okay. I'm looking for Delaware. Okay. And you and I gave you this last week, right? That's Region 3.
Yes, I didn't, and so basically
yeah.
what I want to confirm when I do locate or I'm able to speak with this gentleman is, am I pretty much asking him how can New Africa Black Belt Wall Street apply for those fundings? And
you really want to ask him what fundings are available.
Okay.
And where do you find the grants online, and then we will read the eligibility requirement, okay? So
okay.
you just want to know what grants are available for disaster relief, preparedness, and disaster relief. And that, and you got that number, 215-931-5500. That's the general number for Region 3.
You said 215-910?
215-931-5500.
Got it.
Now, that's for the entire region. And 215, I don't know if that's in Delaware or one of the other states.
Pennsylvania.
Okay. Because your states are Delaware, Maryland, Pennsylvania, Virginia, D.C., and West Virginia.
Okay.
Those are all your states in that region. Okay. So you just want to know where to find the grants online, and then you will go to the grants and pull the down, you know, and see what the requirements are and what is the subject of the grant.
Okay. Okay. Thanks so much.
Mm-hmm.
I have another question regarding the safety factor.
Yes,
is
ma'am.
Is there any planning done by the nation so that in the regions there is also safeguarding of that region so that the people will not be infiltrated by those who attack them for their for the things they have made in preparedness? We know these things. We don't like to think of in this way, but we know it's going to happen. Does the nation have some sort of a plan, so or do you set up your own plan so that you have protection in your region for people not to just infiltrate and have a lot of widespread crime?
I have not seen it other than on a local level within the counties and the cities. I have not seen anything on a regional level to safeguard security on a regional level to safeguard security during a natural disaster. Each in the region, each one of the states in the region is responsible for their own, and the counties and the local governments within those states, they have a relationship with the state, but not on a federal level. I have not seen it on a federal level. And I think that was part of the whole reasoning for dividing the country up into the 10 regions. This is what FEMA did. And that was to not overload the federal infrastructure,
mm-hmm.
put some of the duties and responsibility on the regions. And then the regions will just work with those states that are in their designated region. And
thank you.
Okay.
Sister, you see, that's why the training is so important, because once you're trained, you are now, I wouldn't say have enough information, but you would have enough information to serve that region, and that's what. And remember, you're so unique because you don't have these trainers. You can give them the statistics on the trainers that the federal government have in place right now for the whole nation, but you're going to find that the federal government do not have the trainers for these regions, that they're begging for them, but they can't come forward until they have the training to be regional directors. So, Sister, if you wanted to elaborate it on from there.
Well, let me elaborate on that by reading something to you all. This is a statement. There is a FEMA Partnership Alliance. And it's the universities, the different governments, the for-profit corporations, and a very few nonprofits. We get together once a month and talk about issues and elaborate, okay? And I'm always complaining, where are the nonprofits? But they have not been invited into this alliance. It's called Alliance Partnership, okay? Dr. Amber Siver made an appointment. She's assistant professor at University of Albany in New York. And she was just very outdone. She said, with improved understanding of atmospheric science, improvements in forecasting and communication, we are not seeing a reduction in deaths or economic damages due to natural disasters. We have more information being shared in more formats, customizable and interactive. With all these improvements in science and our ability to communicate, that information is constantly improving. But what the heck is going on with all of the improvements and with all of the information that's being released? Why are we still seeing death tolls and economic losses in record breaker numbers after record breaker? This was one of the members of the Alliance who have been here before me, and she is so fed up. She writes articles, but the numbers are increasing and the economic toll is also increasing. So my response to her after she made that statement was that Amber, remember, as I had said before, the messaging is wrong. The message is out there, but it is the wrong message. The message is not getting to the people. And I feel that I'm representing the underserved population. The language is way up here on the hill somewhere, and the people are down here. And the language is so confusing, and it's written by university professors. Most of the students can't even understand their language. So
yes,
I'm saying the messaging is not reaching the people because it's the wrong message. We got to go back to some basics where we tell people you must be self-sufficient for a week, and you've got to pull your family together and have these conversations.
Sister Aisha, we're off the air.
Yes.
So until next week, this time, we will continue with our business program and, of course, our natural disaster program. Brothers and sisters, thanks so much for listening.
Choice of colors, which one would you choose, my brothers? If there was no day or night, which would you prefer to be right? How long have you hated your white teacher, who told you you love your black preacher? Do you respect your brother's woman friend and share with black folks not of kin? People must prove to the people
a better day is coming
for you and for me. With just a little bit more education
and love for our nation,
would make a better society. Now some of us would rather cuss and make a fuss than to bring about a little trust. But we shall overcome, I believe, someday, if you'll only listen to what I have to say.
And how long have you had your white teacher,
who told you you love your black preacher? Can you respect your brother's woman friend and share with black folks not of kin? I say now, people must prove to the people
a better day is coming
for you and for me. With just a little bit more education
and love for our nation,
would make a better society. And if you had a choice of colors, which one would you choose, my brothers? If there was no day or night? Which would you prefer to be right? And if you had a choice of colors, which one would you choose, my brothers? If there was no day or night, which would you prefer to be right? If you had a choice of colors, which one would you choose, my brother?